Hi, today is September 27th, 2020, and this is Mobile Views Podcast 333. I'm Todd Agasa Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And we are back 2 weeks in a row after being off for 3 months.
It was a while. We're back on track.
Yeah, had not spoken or seen John in 3 months. So it's good to see him twice in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. All right, so on a personal note, and I say that pun intended, as you'll see. So some of you may recall, our fives of listeners may recall that I've been doing two things, really. I've been doing my doodle project, kind of, sort of, with actual paper and pen or pencil. And that was because, and the main reason that happened is not because I thought all of a sudden I should switch to paper and pencil or pen and pencil for doodling. It's that when the pandemic started, for whatever reason, I started taking notes in a hardbound paper notebook with a pen every single workday, and sometimes on weekends. Actually, weekends and weekdays are no longer differentiated. They're all the same. But in any case, that happened, and that's it, the reason it happened is kind of interesting. Thing number one is that I gave up using Evernote last year, 2019, after using it for well over a decade. I mean, I used it before the iPhone. I used it before it even took its kind of current metaphor of note-taking, back when it was an endless scroll. I called it the toilet paper note-taker. It was just one giant roll of paper, and you just kept scrolling and scrolling to take notes, which is fine back then. But in 2018, 2019, I know John and I have talked about it. Just, at least for me, I don't know, John may have other reasons. It just became unreliable and unstable, both the application version and desktop, as well as the mobile apps, and even the web. Evernote on the web, which had been pretty stable, just became close to unusable. So I just stopped using it. But I still needed to take notes, so I started using Google Keep for what I call spot notes or single references, not so much daily notes. I don't have a good mental model on how to use Google Keep for that. I'm sure you can. I just don't have it. I tried Microsoft OneNote. I know Sven and some of our other friends. And I think you, John, I think you're a heavy OneNote user. A bunch of you not tried to convince me, but said when I mentioned this, hey, you know, we've been using OneNote really successfully. So I went back for the 10th time to it, because I've been trying to use it for, you know, well over a decade. And I just still don't like it. It's not that it's bad. It just doesn't fit my own mental model for organizing notes for whatever reason. Or I don't understand how to make it fit for, and I'm too lazy to, you know, put in the work to do so. Any rate, so I started using a hardcover 5x8 notebook with a pen. Background, probably February, before the pandemic had become a real, you know, noticeable thing to most of us. And I filled out like two notebooks already, I think. I mean, I take a lot of notes. Some of them are just scribbles, you know, like, you know, do this, do that kind of thing. Call this person. But, you know, real notes. So after 6 months of doing that, quite successfully, I think. I keep a notebook at work, and I keep one at home, and I just start scribbling stuff in there, including my literal doodles. So a couple of weeks ago, on the 16th, well, I guess not that long ago, today's only the 27th, so less than 2 weeks ago, I took out an app on my iPad that I think John had recommended to me, NoteShelf. Didn't you recommend that to me, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a paid product. It's actually quite good for what it does. I mean, I think for other things, I'd use it a lot. And I used it for a couple of days, and I really like the note-taking experience. I like the fact that it's the digital writing devices it provides, pen and pencil and highlighters and stuff, all work really well. And even the handwriting recognition is pretty good. Kind of works the way, given my horrible handwriting, I think it works pretty good. But for some reason, the page management just didn't fit the way I wanted to do it. So the way page management works in Evernote and some other things is you just keep scrolling, right? There is no page while they're taking a note. I think NoteShelf has a size limit. It's like a page, or, well, maybe dot. But in any case, I decided to create separate pages for every day, you know, kind of like a journal. But you don't just scroll or flip a page like you do in other apps. You need to go out of your note and go to the page manager, or you go to the page manager and you select the page you want to view versus just flipping back and forth. And that That didn't sit well with me after a couple of days. So I went back to a tool on the 23rd, you know, about a week later. I went back to a tool I've been using off and on since 2016. That's Notability on the iPad. And its writing tools are not as rich as NoteShelf, in my opinion. I think, you know, the pen especially is sort of... the pens are okay, but there's no, like, pencil mode, which is not super important for note-taking, in my opinion, but for doodling it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really a good doodling tool, in my opinion. Just for me. I'm sure for other people it's just fine. But its page management fits the way I think I want to work. You know, all right, the way... Not I think. The way I want to work, period. It's like I can flip pages back and forth, and it just sort of works the way I want it to. And so I've been using that for, you know, like I said, since the 23rd. So it's been four or five days. And I'm pretty happy with it so far. It really kind of fits my mental model. And I guess that's why I've been using it off and on for, you know, since 2016 or thereabouts. And it's, I hope... It fits what I want to do, but I really wish it had like a pencil mode for other kinds of doodling. But that's minor, you know. I can do some. Now, the one thing I noticed in both of them, and John might correct me because I think he's been playing with this a lot more, is that neither NoteShelf nor Notability supports the new iPadOS 14 Scribble mode. Is that? I don't know if you tried either.
Yeah, not natively that I've been able to see, although I haven't played too much around with it on either of those apps.
Yeah.
Scribble is interesting. We'll talk more about it in a little bit.
Okay.
But I've been, you know, I look at note-taking the same way as you do, where I'm trying to find the perfect tool. And what got me was just I had been so frustrated with kind of disjointed note-taking because I was using NoteShelf for some things. I was using Evernote for some things. I was using Apple Notes because my wife and I share notes on there quite a bit.
Yeah.
And finally, I've sort of simplified. While OneNote is not perfect, I can't access it on every device I ever use. Plus, it has a web client that I can use pretty easily from Windows PCs if I'm on a shared PC. And so I have really gone with OneNote and Apple Notes. I've stopped using NoteShelf, although I do still like the product. And I do really like that it is a page sort of oriented thing. If you're trying to emulate a paper notebook, I think NoteShelf does a good job, even though the page management can be kind of wonky.
Mm-hmm.
And Notability, I just haven't used in a really long time, even though it's a good app. I want to know where my notes are. And that's where I've been frustrated lately, because when you're using four or five different applications to take notes, you're never quite sure, was I keeping these meeting notes in this notebook here, there, wherever? So OneNote for anything that's more complex, and Apple Notes for all the simple little notes in my life. But yeah, it's a fun, weird problem to have, trying to figure out the best place to take notes.
It is, and we're fortunate that there are a lot of tools to try out, and for the most part, all of them are pretty reasonably priced, I think. You know, none of the ones I've tried have a subscription model, except for Evernote, which is fine. You know, I used Evernote for so long. I got my value out of the money I spent on it, you know, whatever. I don't have any issue with Evernote charging for that. It's, you know, I want companies to stay in business. But I really do like the fact that NoteShelf and Notability, it's a one-time purchase. I think they're like $10 each, maybe, or, you know, thereabouts. Really very reasonable for what you get. And I wish OneNote would fit my mental model, you know, or I could fit its model one way or the other, because you're right, it does have those advantages. What I ended up doing, by the way, is last night, as a matter of fact, I happened to note that, again, pun intended, that Notability for Mac OS is at an 80% discount. So instead of $10, it's $1.99, or, you know, instead of $9.99, it's $1.99. So I spent, hey, $2, sure, why not? So I bought Notability for Mac OS, so at least I have it available there. And what I did was, what I'm doing, I should say, for both NoteShelf and Notability is I export the notes as a PDF to a cloud storage. Now, both of the products back up itself in its native format to iCloud, so that's not a problem. I, you know, it backs up. I go to a different device, like I go to my iPhone, and I can see the notes I wrote on my iPad, so that's great. One thing I did notice is if you export Notability as a Word doc or RTF, maybe, all the ink is lost. So only text is exported. When I exported it as a RTF or Word Doc, I can't remember which. Probably RTF. Mm-hmm. It would not, when I looked at it, in the, you know, and I exported it up to a cloud storage service, and I looked at it, and I couldn't see any of my ink. And I've been doing a lot of ink. I have not been using handwriting recognition much. And by the way, the reason I haven't been using handwriting recognition, aside from the fact that Scribble isn't supported, both of them support HWR, but Notability seems to convert the text to a huge font, like 20 points or something. I think NoteShelf does it the way I want it to. It converts it to whatever typeface size I'm using, usually like 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. And so you got to go through the extra step of doing, you know, you lasso it, you convert it, you know, edit it. You know, that's common for everything. And then I got to resize it, which is a hassle for a number of reasons. Mostly because Notability also puts up a weird dialog box right in the way of where the adjustment is for the text size. So adjusting the text size becomes a hassle. I've got to aim my pencil and click on the thing under another open pop-up, which is odd. That won't go away. But anyway, mm-hmm. So I haven't been using handwriting recognition much on Notability. Used it a bit on NoteShelf. And the other thing I noticed, and maybe it's just me, and maybe John can talk to me about his experience. When I write with a pen or pencil on a 5x8 notebook, I write at my normal size. I don't know. I'd have to go. Well, let me go grab it. I have a paper notebook right here. What's the point size of? I would say I write at about 12 points. 12, maybe 4. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe 12 points. If I were to compare it to a computer font size or typeface size. When I write on the iPad Mini, actually, when I write on any iPad, I'm writing at like 20 points, 24 points, which is the size that, you know, Notability, maybe Notability is looking how big I'm writing and figures I can't see, and it's converting it to points. Maybe it's intelligence as well. This guy's blind, you know?
Yeah, it's trying to help you.
You know, I'll convert a point size he can actually see. But for whatever reason, I write bigger on the iPad using an Apple Pencil. Whether it's a Apple Pencil 1 on my iPad Mini or an Apple Pencil 2 on my iPad Pro, I still write bigger on an iPad than I do on paper. Is that what you found also, or you're one of those people, you're pretty facile with it on a iPad?
I haven't really noticed too much about it with Notability, but I do. I have to play around with it, because I just looked up, because I own Notability on all the platforms.
Yeah.
But I haven't played with it too much lately.
Yeah. I really like Notability for a lot of reasons, except, like I said, I don't doodle with it, because it just doesn't, so far at least. Maybe I'll change my mind. I know one of the reasons, because I write so large on my iPad Mini, which is where I take most of my notes. I write so large, relatively speaking, for whatever reason, I just don't write the same size I do on paper. There's not much room for a doodle. You know, there's no margin for a doodle to happen while I'm listening to a meeting or, you know, in the middle of taking notes. So that's one of the reasons, by the way. I was thinking this through, you know, even before I went through this series of I don't know if you'll call it experiments, but research, is I was thinking about buying the new iPad Air, because I thought, well, if I'm going to write big, at least I'll have longer horizontal writing length on an iPad Air, assuming I write it the same size as do it an iPad Mini, you know, same writing size. Mm-hmm. I'll have more run room, so to speak, on a Air's larger screen. I have a Pro, so I guess I could test it on my Pro and see how that works. But I have this odd way of thinking about how to use devices, and my iPad Pro does, you know, I don't want to take it outside and run around with it. So anyway, so that's it's not really a rant, but sort of my journey of note taking the last couple of years, and especially last couple of weeks, because it's been, I don't know how everybody else is, but, you know, for those of us and are fortunate to still have a job, and I do consider myself fortunate, for those of us fortunate to still have a job to, you know, to do and income coming in, it's been a wild 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a ton of work and a ton of information to keep, much more than I think I would have had this not been going on. Anyway, I'm interested to hear about your thoughts, John, you know, now that I've kind of.
Yeah, well, and you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Scribble, and okay. I guess we can talk about Scribble now, because I've been playing with Scribble, I guess, for about 2 months now, and I had a suspicion that Scribble was doing some sort of machine learning, because the early betas of iOS 14, iPadOS 14. I wasn't too impressed with Scribble. It was kind of messing up, and it would actually take me longer to write something with Scribble than to tap it out on the virtual keyboard. So earlier today, I was reading around, and I found a article that had quoted Craig Federighi at Apple, and they were talking about the on-device processing that's really used, and basically how there's a lot of on-device for it. And it was in there that it does use machine learning, and that was interesting to me because I have noticed that in the last month or so, Scribble has gotten things much better in terms of, and I didn't know if it was the betas or what it was, but I do think it's interesting that Scribble learns from you. I don't know if that's cloud stored anywhere. So that is my kind of concern. If I switch iPads, is it going to have to relearn what I'm writing?
Yeah.
But I think if you can combine Scribble in with note taking and, in the OS as it is right now, it is an interesting idea to have an iPad where you're using it primarily with your Apple Pencil. And about 6 months ago, I made the decision to always keep my Apple Pencil magnetically right up against my iPad, even though I used to just leave it in my bag or something like that, just because I was annoyed that I wasn't using it as much. It was the same time I started carrying my AirPods in my pocket all the time because I was annoyed I wasn't using them as much as I felt I should be. So I am interested to see where this goes. If Scribble keeps learning from us, I think that's going to be a really functional way to go about note-taking and just interacting with iPad.
So I'm going to, since Scribble doesn't seem to support or isn't supported, apparently, by the third-party apps I've tried, I assume you've been using it all in Apple Notes, or does it work in OneNote also?
I've been using Scribble mostly through the operating system. So writing, like text message replies, quick emails, things like that. And it's worked fairly well there. Using it in the search bar for, anytime I'm holding the pencil already, I try to keep holding the pencil as much as possible.
And going back to Apple Note, well, first of all, I'm really looking forward to being able to use Scribble in third-party applications. And that's one of the big problems in iPadOS. Not problem. One of the limitations of iPadOS 14 now is that a lot of the new features aren't yet supported by third-party developers. But I'm sure they'll change over the next couple of months. And by the time the end of the calendar year rolls around, we'll probably have a lot more to say about it. I am kind of curious about your experience with Apple Notes, because I've been reading that it's really been enhanced in terms of its capabilities recently. But I really never use it, to be honest. So.
And all of mine are still mostly just text.
Okay.
And that's mostly because I've been having issues with backing up Apple Notes. So I have a couple of products that will back up from your device. And what I've found is that backing up Apple Notes to plain text will strip out, in some cases, all of the handwriting. So I've been very aware that the only way that maybe I can get an actual indication of an Apple Note is by doing the export on a per note basis. So I think before I could ever fully switch to Apple Notes, I would need to be able to automate that export process where every single one of my notes I could just, go through and automate. I guess I could do that through Automator on Mac OS, just have it manually do the key presses to take one note, export it, do a down arrow to the next note, export it, et cetera, et cetera. So I might play with that to be able to do my backups, but I really like to have things in common file formats if I'm going to rely on them.
Yeah, by the way, interesting experience. So I've been doing most of my testing, we shouldn't say that. I've been doing some of my testing of iPadOS 14 on my very first 2016 iPad Pro, which is not the first iPad Pro, but it's the first one I got. And unfortunately, and I've done this twice before, so you would think, hey, you should learn from the past experience, but no, I apparently am not a, first trial learner. I bought my first iPad Pro only had 32 gigs of RAM. And so I keep running out of memory on it. And so I had to uninstall apps, and I installed some apps, and then I used that, you know, keep it in the cloud until I need it thing. And so when I went to Apple Notes, and this verifies I've not used it much, it said, oh, wait, I have to reload Apple Notes for you before you, you can actually use it.
Yeah, I've got to get you up to date. Yeah, that's kind of funny when it makes you do that.
Yeah. But anyway, it's on there now. I'm kind of looking, and now I do have a couple of notes. I'll say maybe I have like maybe 24 notes in here. Some of them are just like tests. Like, you know, literally just says Microsoft keyboard test. I mean, this was like years ago when I was trying to figure out if my Microsoft keyboard was broken or if I had just a Bluetooth problem. So it turns out the keyboard is broken. But at any rate, and then I've got one ABCDEFG, so I'm going to assume that's a test also. But
I have about 87 Apple Notes. Yeah. And so I've been really leery to do more with them. But like I said, if I actually do I guess I can do a workflow and automator that would manually back them all up and do that periodically. But.
Okay, now on to iPad OS 14 itself. Some initial impressions. I got kind of really interested in what John has to say. I know we've already talked about Scribble quite a bit. But the first thing I noticed, I don't know, John, is I've had a lot of problems with Touch ID on my iPads, especially. Well, I guess iPhones you don't because it's all Face ID. But so I've had a lot of problems with Touch ID on all of my iPads for, you know, like at least a year. But with iPad OS 14 or maybe 14.0.1, which just came out, can't exactly say which, probably 14, it seems like it's a lot more reliable. Have you had noticed that too, or has that not been a problem for you?
Well, the interesting thing is I don't have any devices right now that have Touch ID.
I didn't know that.
All of my, I have an iPad Pro that has Face ID.
Right.
And my iPhone 10 is Face ID. And my Mac, I will take it back. I have one device that has Touch ID. That's my MacBook Pro. And I've had no problem with it because it's not running iOS. It's running macOS.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, I'm hoping that I will have devices with Touch ID in the future again.
Especially because, now that we're wearing masks.
yeah, exactly. But I guess I'll just have to wait to see what happens.
Well, I'll note to our fives listeners, though. So I've, on my iPad Pro, John's right, the iPad Pro 2020 that I have at least has Face ID. So that's, you know, Touch ID doesn't have Touch ID at all. It doesn't have a button. But the 2016 iPad Pro that I mentioned I had upgraded and using, Touch ID is a lot more reliable. Same for the iPad Mini 5 that also has Touch ID. I was retraining it about every 2 weeks up until recently. And then I just gave up and started typing in my PIN. Mm-hmm. But it's recently, after the updates, both of them have been very reliable. I would say 90% of the time, maybe more. It's just, the Touch ID just works. And it's not that it's broken, by the way. I've tried like fingers that I haven't, you know, entered into the system, and it does differentiate between, you know, fingers that are authorized to log in and those that are not. So it's not that it's just simply broken. But so that was a very happy find. And yes, I hope Apple brings back Touch ID maybe to the power switch like they did with the new iPad Air for the iPhone 12, because typing in my PIN every time I open a phone, you know, when I have a mask on, which is frequently these days, that's become a hassle and a half. Okay, now John, I have to ask you, because this might just be me, have you had any issues at all with widgets? I mean, you helped me with a couple last week, so I've been making peace with widgets.
I have not had too many issues. My only big issue and complaint is the battery widget now in iOS 14 doesn't give you battery percentages. It just gives you the circle that shows relatively what your devices are at. The other last night I was trying to check the charging of my Apple Watch in the other room, and I knew that it was at somewhere between 75% and 100%, but I would have liked to know that it was at 85% and not 90 or 90, you know, 2% or somewhere else that could have been in that range.
Okay, this week I can help you. I can help you with that one. So what you do is delete that widget, and then and then go back up and hit the plus sign in the upper left, and then go add the battery widget back. But before you do, scroll through the widget options, and there should be three. There should be the default, which is useless, like you say. It only shows, you know, a graph. And then the second option gives you the circles plus a numeric percentage. And the third option gives you a list, just like iOS iPadOS 13.
Now I have the list.
You see it?
That is much nicer.
Yeah.
Well, then there. That yeah. So now I have no problems with widgets. Did and you fixed them.
This was driving me bonky all week since the update.
Well, yeah, I kind of like to know exactly where I stand with things.
Yeah.
And now I've just realized that my Apple Watch is down to 31%. So I'm trying the idea of actually wearing it to bed, even though I have the Aura ring that already gives me sleep tracking. So maybe I won't keep wearing it, but I did wear it to bed last night just because I was curious. It lost about 10% of its battery while I was sleeping.
Yeah.
So I was curious what the Series 6 would do.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to help John for once. So I'm proud.
Which reminds me, did you get a Series 6?
I'm wearing it right now.
I thought you said okay, so we should talk about our Series 6s when we get a chance here.
Okay, yeah.
In our show notes, but it would be good to talk about.
The other thing I noticed, and I hope I didn't notice this wrong, is that non-Apple widgets are second-class citizens. So you can't escalate them to the top of the screen, or you can't put them in a stack with Apple widgets. Like, you can't have the weather app and, say, the carrot weather app in the same stack or something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I think I can't even bring a non-Apple widget up to the top of the widget list. Let me try it. So I'm going to hold this guy, and I'm going to say edit home screen. And let's see which one of these is non-Apple. Oh, I have two weather widgets for some reason. Let's remove one. Oh, I don't have... Oh, here. I have carrot weather here. It says I have to change it, actually. So I don't have anything to change. But I did notice that on some of my other apps that are widgets that I could not, add them correctly. Oh, I'm going to get rid of this one. For some reason, I had three weather apps on mine. It's really weird. But that's one. The other thing I noticed, and it is a third-party app, is that most of the widgets are basically... they're kind of nice to look at. They'll show you like news headlines. But if you touch anything, it launches the app. The exception to this is pCalc. I don't know if you ever bought pCalc, John. So pCalc is a amazing calculator app for iPad and iPhone. It's kind of expensive. I think it's like maybe $10 or $15. When other calculators are free, with ads or like $2 or $3. This one is kind of pricey, but in my opinion, pCalc is worth every penny you spend on it. It is amazing. And the other thing I really liked about it, the thing I like it even more now is pCalc as a widget is a functional calculator. It does not need to launch the full calculator. So you can, you can do some quick calculations right in the widget sidebar, and it is amazing. Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I have pCalc as well. My only complaint with pCalc, and it's a weird complaint, is do you remember the old application NeoCal?
No, I don't think I do.
It dated back to the Palm OS days, and then they did port it to iOS. But the original programmer just kind of lost interest in it a few years ago. It had a very nice... statistical calculator.
Yeah.
And now there is no really nice statistical calculator. So that would be my only request with pCalc. And I've actually, I think in the past at some point, I had written to the developers basically saying, if you're interested in doing statistical calculations, I would love to help you, figure out what calculations would be useful and do a statistical register and all those sorts of things.
I see. Not scientific, statistical. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the ability to have, X's and Y registers and then do correlations.
What do I have for
standard deviations and all of that. But yeah, I love Neo, or I love pCalc. And I actually have it on Mac OS as well. And it's a functional watch app, too. It does work.
That's
on
right.
The watch.
That guy is amazing. It's one programmer. And that guy is amazing.
Casio calculator watch.
Okay, so there is it's actually a business calculator called 10BII that I remember buying when my daughter was in college, and we were talking about what. So I bought it to see if she could use it for business stuff. But it also has scientific calcul—I mean, sorry—it also has some statistical functions on here. I'm just kind of looking at it. Like I can see a bunch of different summations, you know, some xy, some y squared, you know, things like that. Some x.
I more or less made my peace with this, but it is interesting to think about how nice it would be to have some of these. Yeah. And I mean, it's not like I couldn't do a spreadsheet for all these things. I use Excel on my phone much more than I think most people would imagine. So I started automating a lot of my life in Excel and using it on my phone quite a bit. So
right. By the way, if you want to go crazy, and it's pretty cheap. I think it's like a couple of dollars. Wolfram Alpha can do some pretty amazing statistics right on a phone or iPad. I mean, you can feed it a vector and, you know, do all... I don't know if you can do a matrix. Probably can do a matrix. But you can do some pretty amazing stuff. Oh, you can do a matrix.
Yeah, I do own Wolfram Alpha on iOS, but I haven't played with it in a while. Maybe I'll have to download it and see how they're doing. Yeah. Another one that I found recently is called Charty.
Oh, I don't know that one.
C-H-A-R-T-Y.
No.
It works with Siri shortcuts, and it'll basically let you chart data.
Wow.
So it ships with... some example charts that use your Apple Health data. So some of the examples they give are your heart rate, and they'll do math functions, health data functions. It's kind of a cool niche product, but it will let you create charts. And some of the charts it makes are very nice. And if you like visualizing your data.
And who doesn't?
It really is a fun one to play around with.
Yeah, I just found the website, chartyios.app, A-P-P. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much it costs. I'll go look it up later.
It might be a freemium model. I think I upgraded it when I got it, because it wasn't very much to upgrade to premium. I think it was $2 or something
like
reasonable. That. Usually if it's a small amount, I'm very happy to do it for an independent developer.
It's not a subscription, right? It's a one-time?
Nope, one-time.
That's worth it then, in my opinion.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's one I'm going to look at right after this. Thank goodness it's not one of your more expensive suggestions, which I have taken and bought.
Yes, I know. I feel bad for that. Well, and I have another cool thing. My tech tip this week at the end is a really cool one, too.
Okay.
So
moving on, we talked about Scribble already, but sidebars. You know, so I thought, didn't we already have sidebars? So I did keep one iPad running iOS 13, so I can compare, and sure enough, apps like Apple apps, like Files, Photos, and Music, all have sidebars by default now. I don't know if they were available in the past and just hidden, but I really like it. It's really great to have sidebars with menu options and things to select from, so you don't have to constantly guess how to do things. It's great. It looks the iPad Music app, in fact, looks like the old iTunes on the Mac before they took away the sidebars from it, which I thought was the dumbest thing in the world.
Well, Apple does that.
Yeah.
Apple giveth and Apple taketh away, and it's funny when you watch macOS evolution, things that we had, we now have back that were gone for a while. It's just really interesting how they change things, like the iTunes icon. You know, it goes from being annoying to being less annoying to more annoying, depending on the color they decide to make it and how prominent they want it to be.
Yeah, my daughter just upgraded her iPhone to 14, like yesterday, I think, while she was visiting. And she says, oh, my icon's changed, or a lot of my icons changed. They look different. So that kind of upset her a little. But the other thing, I don't know if this is part of Scribble, John, but maybe you can tell me. So Apple Pencil Smart Selection, which is a new feature in iPad OS 14, lets you do things like double tap to select a word and triple tap to select a sentence. And it works in Apple Notes, for example. I tested that. But it doesn't work with the third-party note-taking apps I've tried. I don't know if you've tried Smart Selection. It's a good idea. The way mouse clicks work on a desktop. So
yeah, I haven't tried it much yet, but I assume it'll be coming to the third parties as they update their SDKs and all of that. But
yeah, we just need to be patient. I need to be patient. I'm just wanting to use all of these. I think useful. You know, it's not a matter of, oh, it's cool and new, but it's like, oh, Yeah, I need that. Like, now. Yeah. Now would be good, but now is not what's happening. Okay, so spatial audio. We kind of mentioned it last week. We found the setting that lets you test it, and but I haven't done more than that. I think you have, right?
Yeah, so I decided on Friday morning I really wanted to try out spatial audio, and I did a little bit of searching for what I could use it with, and I actually, we had watched the live-action Aladdin on Disney Plus the night before, so it was right in my recently watched. I pulled it up and listened to the last 10 minutes on my AirPod Pro, and it sort of blew me away. There were times I was convinced that the audio was coming out of my MacBook speakers, even though I knew it was coming out of my AirPods. I had to take the AirPods out of my ears to make sure that it wasn't like the audio was going through both, because it was really kind of cool to have it sound like the audio was coming from the device I was watching, even if that device was down to my left or over to my right or anything like that. So definitely was much more of an immersive experience than I was expecting it to be.
I definitely need to try that, because all I've done so far is that little, you know, spatial audio test thing that's built into iPad OS. So looking forward to that. What's this next thing you're talking about, BackTap? I don't even know what that means.
Well, before we get to that, do we want to talk a little bit about, since we both now have Siri 6s?
Sure.
So a couple of initial things. What do you think of the always on
capability? I like it. Okay, remember, I moved from a 3, which was always off.
Yeah. And I went from a 4. And so it's really kind of interesting to see how Apple, you know, dumbs down the watch face when it's inactive. You know, the seconds go away and the second hand goes away.
Right.
And, so that's been kind of a cool thing. Did you get one of the One Piece band?
The solo band? You know? I did not. No,
I did, and I've really kind of enjoyed it. I've used it mostly with the Series 6. It shocked me that I was not the largest size. I was a 10 out of 12, so but it's been comfortable. It is a little annoying to take off after you exercise. If you've been sweating, it's a little bit difficult to remove when you're getting into the shower or something like that. But yeah, otherwise, I've really enjoyed my Series 6. It hasn't been a leaps and bounds difference over the Series 4, but it has been a pleasant surprise in a number of ways.
Yeah. I got the, I guess, the default sports band, and that whole over under thing just doesn't work for me. So I took my band off my Series 3 and I put it on my 6, and I'm kind of fat, dumb, and happy now.
What band do you use normally if you're not using the sport band?
I have a knockoff of the Hermes thing. I'm holding.
Oh, okay.
So all right. Instead of $150, I paid like $11. On Amazon. Yeah. So it's magnetic, so it fits exactly. You know, it's not like whatever the hole is that, and I really want it to be in between that hole. And that's why I like it a lot. Also, the one problem with it, because it is magnetic all the way around, is it'll like pick up paper clips, and I've picked up a pen that was lying on my desk with it. It's gotten stuck to metal buttons on my shirt.
Then you just look magical.
Yeah.
Like you have this ability.
Yeah. But I, you know, as a person who moved from a 3 to a 6, holy cow, that is, it was a giant step forward to me. It was like, you know, one small step for man, one giant step for Apple Watch owner.
Well, and the only frustration I really have is when you have two Apple Watches on your iPhone,
yes,
you can't easily copy watch faces from one to the other. At least I haven't found a way to do it.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what I did.
Okay.
When I set up my watch, I set it up to restore from my Apple 3 backup, my Watch 3 backup.
Yeah.
And then I changed the name so that I can figure out.
Yeah, that'll do it too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much I'm going to use my Series 4. I had thought about trying to do sleep tracking with it, wearing it at night. And, so I did not do that, but that would be a viable solution. Yeah.
I still have my other watch, by the way. So after I renamed the watches, they're unique and, you know, uniquely identified and everything. So if you wear the one watch and you raise your hand, by the way, I just learned this because I have never had two watches before. If you when you put on one of the two watches, you raise your hand and the iPhone recognizes which watch you're wearing and starts, you know, coordinating with it. So it's pretty smart.
I've had a few times in the past I had used my Series 3 and my Series 0. because I had done some tracking with the Series Zero, but it does seem like now it can swap a lot quicker than it did before.
You know, the other thing I noticed is that even though both my 3 and my 6 are 42 millimeters, the 6 looks a lot bigger. I'm not sure why. I mean, the watch face. Let me get my 3 sitting right here.
Well, yeah, the sizes did change between the 3 and the 4.
Yeah, the bezel is smaller, and the watch face is, I'm going to say, significantly larger. Just kind of looking at them side by side.
It went from a 42 to a 44.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it is? Okay, 42 to 40. I thought it was still a 42. And also, it's got rounded corners now, which is interesting. Versus, you know, it's a square, right angle, rectangular on the 3. So I don't know when that changed, but I, you know, having not had anything in between.
Yeah, that changed in the 3 to the 4. Yeah. So you're a couple years behind on that, but it's still nonetheless awesome.
So I'm really liking it. Battery seems to die a little bit faster. I think my Apple Watch, I'd be sort of at the 50-60% range at night before I charge it up. I charge it up overnight, I should know. This one seems to dip down into the 30-40% battery charge range by the time I'm ready to, you know, put it on the magnetic charger. I should also note, you know, I was at Sam's Club a couple of weeks ago, and I bought this. I don't know if John can see this. It looks like a giant lip balm container?
Like a big lipstick sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting, this was like, I want to say it was about $30 at Sam's Club. And as John may know, I cannot order a lot of rechargers because they won't ship to Hawaii. So rechargeable lithium ion kind of things, they just don't ship here. I guess it's lithium ion these days, not nickel metal hydride. But anyway, they won't ship to Hawaii, so I can't buy things like Anker, you know, USB portable chargers unless I see them in the store. Every now and then I'll find somebody who'll ship one to me, but it's more times often I can't. Anyway, I saw this in the store, and it does 3 things. It's a regular USB charger, so you can charge it up, you know, from a normal USB source and then recharge your phone or whatever. But it also has a Qi charger that you wrap your watch around, and it'll charge your watch, which is kind of cool. It's got a little switch, so you got to turn it on. And the switch is kind of hard to find. Oh, yeah, it's right here. You know, I wish manufacturers would make switch colors different from the actual case so I could see them. But, you know, printers do that all the time. You have a black or a white printer, you know, the case. And the button is exactly the same color. And, you know, unless you're under perfect light, you can't see it. But at any rate, that rant aside. So you can charge your watch and your phone while you're on the move. Although, you know, nowadays most of us aren't on the move that much. And this part doesn't work, but if you flip the top, it's actually got a space for the AirPod, but it's for the first gen. So I can't charge the AirPod Pro. But still, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. The price wasn't too expensive.
It's something.
So.
Yeah. And I have something similar. If you remember a few months ago, or I guess about a year ago, when we had Sven Johansson on, he had talked about a Griffin charger for your Apple Watch. So I have that I carry with me in my Bort bag, just in case I get to a situation where my Apple Watch is dying and I need to give it up. Or I want to update the operating system while I'm at work and it needs to be on charger. I'll carry that with me.
Well, you know, I have to say, I have a very specific need for this. And this is why I can't order it from Amazon. So I was really happy when I saw this at Sam's Club. And the need is this. So, you know, we rarely talk about our day jobs, but one of the responsibilities I have in my day job is during an emergency, I need to go to the office. So when a hurricane was bearing down on us a couple of months ago, I think it was in August, I had to go into the office. And had it hit, I had to stay there. So, and I was there and I said, I have no way to charge my Apple Watch. I forgot to bring my one and only, you know, charger that comes with my watch. And so when my watch died, it was just going to die. I have chargers. Yeah. My phone is no problem. You know, I have lots of cables and stuff for it. But I didn't have a Qi charger for my watch handy with me, So I said, oh, shoot. You know, I'm going to lose my watch if I have to stay overnight or longer. But anyway, that's the use case for this thing for me. So it's got a pretty important role. It's going to go in my go bag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. What else about my watch do I like or not like? There's nothing I don't like. I did try the EKG feature. It says, you know, it doesn't detect heart attacks, but It says everything's okay, so that's good. And I saw my doc recently, so, you know, I know that's
Have you
a fact.
Tried the blood oxygen?
Yes. I guess try is relative because it does it kind of automatically, right? You don't really... Doesn't it, like, do it while you're sleeping or something, or...
Well, I haven't been able to try it yet because my iPhone is actually running a beta of iOS 14.2. And the iOS, for some weird reason, iOS 14.2 beta does not have it enabled. I'd have to downgrade to iOS 14 stock in order to get it to work. So I'm waiting until Apple just turns that on. But it's a very strange thing to be on a later operating system but not have... something enabled.
Okay, so to answer John, so I've actually got, I made it a favorite, and so it's just, it doesn't only take it when I'm sleeping, because I just saw the latest measurement it took was at 9:46 a.m., well, you know, 10 minutes ago while we were talking. So it took it, I'm at 93%, which is okay, it's better to be 95 or more, but it did drop to 93% for some reason, maybe because I was talking too much and I ran out of oxygen. But it's sort of in the range of 90 to 100%, you know, and it's been taking, I guess it's weekly? Yeah, I guess it's weekly.
I'm going to show John. I'm going to continue to go with, you know, the finger blood oxygen I have right now.
See, I'm not sure.
But you've got yours. And...
I got the finger one, too. Where's mine?
Have you compared them to see how?
You know, I have not really, and I need to. I can't find mine right now. Oh, here it is. I stuck it in my... pencil holder. So I've got a Bluetooth one. And of course it's not continuous because you got to stick it on your, but
yeah,
I got one of these things too. I think I've been reading, not an expert at this, of course, but I have been reading that the dedicated pulse oximeter, which I think is the official name, mm-hmm. the dedicated pulse oximeters are more accurate than the Apple Watch SpO2. Which makes sense, right, when you think about it. You know, it's kind of doing a camera scan of the top of your wrist versus your finger. And the tip of your finger, you would think, would have more capillaries and or whatever else it's using to measure, you know, the color of your blood, which I think what it's doing. So that's what I've been reading. Not a health expert. So I have to just go with what I've read so far. And that makes sense to me. It sort of has, you know, external validity to my... limited medical knowledge, so I'm good with that. Gee, I just lost a little holding case for my pulse oximeter, but that's okay. I'll go find it. Alrighty, let's see. Is there anything else? I can't remember. What else? I haven't tried any of the new watch faces. I just kind of been using the one. Like I said, I just transferred everything over from my watch by restoring from backup. I have not. I don't know. I tried the EKG. Did I try anything else? Nope, I think that's the only thing. So, you know, I didn't try falling because not a good idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't try that just for fun.
Yeah. I remember seeing, gosh, who was it? He was on maybe MacBreak. I stopped listening to MacBreak Weekly, but when I did, Rene Ritchie was on back in his iMore days, and he is apparently a martial artist, and so he's trained to fall safely and all that. And he actually, like, you know, fell down on purpose, and it, you know, detected his fall and he verified all that. So, but I am not a martial artist, so if I fall, I'll probably hurt something.
Well, I'm sure we'll have more on Apple Watch Series 6 as we both play with ours more.
Yep.
But I did think we had to acknowledge that because we both got them this week.
Yep.
So.
And like I said, you know, earlier in an earlier podcast, for the folks, yeah, if you move from a 5 to 6, it's probably not a big deal. But moving from a 3 to a 6, it's like going
That's a
20-year-old car to a brand new car. It's like, whoa, I didn't know cars could do these kind of things.
Well, that segues nicely into what I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
So, you know, Apple always packs in weird features in places you don't know about. They don't always tell you about these features. And some of them Apple assumes nobody would want to use unless you had a need.
Right.
But more people than just a small niche might like them. So one of them that people have discovered in iOS 14, I'm not the first to find this, it's been going around the internet for a couple of weeks now, mm-hmm. is called Back Tap.
Back Tap, okay.
And Back Tap is an accessibility toggle. So you have to go into settings, accessibility, and then touch to find it. That will allow you to map a double tap on the back of your iPhone or a triple tap
on the back of your iPhone?
Yes. So if I take my iPhone right. and I double tap, you'll see that it'll pop up a menu.
Huh.
And you can actually map that double tap or triple tap to various system actions. But most importantly, you can map it to a Siri shortcut, which means you can basically make it into whatever you want it to be. So one of the things I've been doing lately is I've been tracking my macros as I've been trying to lose weight. So I track protein, mm-hmm. fat, and carbs. And I have Siri shortcuts that will tell me where I'm at on all three of those, how many I have remaining for the day based on how many carb servings I want to do that day. And I actually now have a Siri shortcut that pops up a menu, because Siri shortcuts can do a menu function and actually branch out to other shortcuts.
Yeah.
And I sort of have a quick launch menu that I can completely customize by just double tapping on the back of my iPhone. I can choose any of the shortcuts that I've put in that menu. And it's an extremely powerful customization that Apple kind of rolled out, that if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't ever know to look for it.
So, and you have to scroll way to the bottom to find it, too.
Yep. Settings, accessibility, and then touch.
Hmm.
And it's all the way at the bottom. You can set it for a double tap or a triple tap. Same. You can actually have them do different things. So you could actually have one Siri shortcut for double tap, another one for triple tap. And it'll also let you map it to some more low-level stuff in the operating system, like reachability, the feature where it'll bring down the top of the screen towards your thumb. You can have it do that. So it's kind of a cool interaction. It basically, I think it gives your iPhone two dedicated buttons
that is
you didn't
pretty cool.
know you had before.
And it also explains the name, because when you were talking about back tap, I thought it would like move your browser back or something. So I didn't realize you're literally talking about tapping the back of the Apple iPhone.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You know what I wish you could do? I wish you could, so I just looked at it. You can, like you said, you can double tap or triple tap. I wish you could do like Morse code, so you could use that to unlock your phone. You know, you tap in, I don't know, four Morse code alphanumeric things, and it's like tap, 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 tap. It's probably faster than trying to get Face ID to stop working and then typing your PIN in, but that's just me. Could be wrong.
Well, the interesting thing is it will actually still work on the lock screen. So if I look at my phone and do, my lock screen unlock, so it does it through Face ID, I can then, the double tap will still work. And so I don't even have to, swipe up from the lock
screen
in order to run any of my little reports that I have it run. So
that's pretty cool.
I've been really having a lot of fun with Siri shortcuts lately. It's gotten much more powerful than I think we thought. And of course, you can edit them and create them on iPad OS as well. So if you have a keyboard on your iPad or a keyboard on your iPhone, that makes it a lot easier to do this scripting sort of stuff as well.
Right. Okay. So one last thing, it's not on our show notes, but I just happened to notice I had it lying around. So I was talking to my daughter about, if she wanted to update her, she wanted to get a new iPad or a new MacBook or something. And her MacBook isn't too old. She has a MacBook Air that's, when did she start grad school? 2017, so it's 3 years old. I guess it's getting kind of old. And she says, no. And I said, why not? She says, because the new MacBooks don't have USB-A ports or SD card slots or anything else she wants, I said, well, you can put a hub on. And she says, yeah, but it's just a hassle. And so I said, well, you can get USB thumb drives that have first of all, you have iCloud, so you can just back up everything to iCloud or Microsoft OneDrive. So, you don't really need a thumb drive anymore. But I guess she's a little old school despite her young age. And she says, no, just sometimes I just like having a physical backup. And so I actually said, well, they're not too expensive. So I went to go buy one because I don't have any myself. So I bought, I'm holding it up for John. I don't know if John can see it.
So yeah, it's
one of the dual-headed USB has a USB-A on one side and USB-C on the other, and I haven't even plugged it in to try it yet. But it's 128 gigs, so it's not huge, but it's pretty good size. I think 120 gigs is a hefty size for backing up, stuff. And I think it was under $30. I think it was like $25 on Amazon, so it's not very expensive.
And I'll note that USB-C to A adapters are actually really expensive on Amazon.
Oh, nice.
Well. So nice. I have a couple of those. I have one that I carry with me in my bag that it's just a very simple A to C input, and I've never needed really anything more with my MacBook Pro that has USB-C on it. I can still use all my A stuff, because really, how often do you need to plug in multiple things when you're traveling? You know,
yeah,
you
might exactly.
Have a, you know, a mouse, or you might have a USB drive. You probably don't have both, and plus, most of these on Amazon are two packs for under $10.
Yeah.
So you could easily have those adapters with you. And there's also C to A's if you need those. But and A to C and C to A.
Yeah, and there's also very small and very affordable mini USB-C hubs these days with power, you know, PD power distribution ports, so you can, you know, charge and everything. And they're like size of a matchbook. I mean, it's really amazing what they can do. I think the only thing the little ones don't have is like an HDMI out, but hey, you know, generally speaking, you don't need that when you're traveling, although I guess if you're doing presentations, maybe. But the other thing that's happened the last couple of years, I know when I got my first USB-C, I think it was a Chromebook, I bought a hub for it, and it was really, for me, it was really expensive. I think it was like $80 at the time to get a, you know, decent USB-C hub for the Chromebook. And I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, this is a pretty good one. I think I bought an Anker or something, and it'll last me. And now USB-C hubs are down in the $35-$40 range. I just buy one every time I buy a new USB-C device now. So it's in, you know, whatever bag that the device is in, one of these hubs go in it too, because they're really reasonably priced.
I'll have to also mention, I bought a product from elevationlab.com.
Yeah.
That is a USB, it's called the Elevation Hub. Let me get a link to it and put it in our show notes so you can see it.
Okay.
But it piggybacks on the back of your MacBook charger. So it's now in the show notes if you want to look. Mm-hmm. It basically is a small white USB-C hub.
Right.
That it's a USB-A port, a USB-C port, and an a full-size SD card slot.
Oh, nice,
so
yeah.
I got this for when I travel because it basically has any kind of port I would ever need and also will allow pass-through power on the USB-C and the USB-A. So I and plus it has a little bit of a cable management thing where it'll give you, you can buy it with a braided cord that you can wrap around your MacBook charger. So
that's nice. Yeah, I might
pick that up early in the summer. And it's been a nice little addition if I were to travel. I have not traveled anywhere, but I assume at some point I will travel again.
Someday we may, who knows?
Yes.
So it's like $30 I see on the website? Is that the one?
Or
is that different?
Like
That's different. That's just the charging. It's the
I
hub.
I picked it up when it first launched. So they say it's pre-order, but I did receive one already.
Got
so.
One. Okay. You know, the other thing, I was just scrolling down because they have a lot of interesting stuff. They have a non-electronic device called the Anchor Site to, like, hang your headphones and stuff. I just want to say for those of you who are, what's the word I want to use to describe myself? Who are cheapskates, you know, who don't want to really spend a lot of money and stuff. You think, well, don't want to spend money on something like that. I had a couple of packs of Sugru, which is a moldable glue. I think John's familiar with it. It's a little bit pricey for what is basically really expensive Play-Doh, but it's really cool. And what it does is it'll stick to pretty much anything, and it'll mold into pretty much anything, and it solidifies into a, you know, a solid object. Not, it doesn't stay soft like Play-Doh. It'll solidify into a solid object in like a couple hours, 24 hours max, even in humid conditions like I live in. And so I've been just sticking Sugru, I've been molding into a little hook and sticking it onto the side of things like my lamp and, you know, my lamp on my desk. And so, and I've got these little tiny hooks that are big enough for a headphone or something. And I just stick them on the side. It's pretty much out of the way. It's probably not the prettiest thing in the world. My wife hasn't noticed it, so she hasn't commented on any of them yet. but that's what I've been doing. So about $10-$12 will get you maybe like a 5-pack, which doesn't sound like a lot, but they're really pretty handy. I've used them for all kinds of stuff, even like my wife was putting, she's gone into this thing where she's putting up a whole bunch of photos and stuff on the walls lately, you know, after living here for over 20 years. And, you know, there are some holes that were there from a previous photo or something. And I said, oh, I don't even need to putty that thing up. I'll just stick some Sugru in it. And it was pretty much the same color as our wall, so it just... And it's going to be behind another frame, but, you know, if somebody ever takes off the frame, it looks pretty much like a wall color, and just stuck right in. It's solid. Anyway,
very
Sugru.
Very good.
Yep, yep. I really don't use it that often, but when I do, it's super handy. Okay, we've been nattering on for quite a bit, probably because we haven't talked in 3 months, except for last week. So anyway, maybe now that my audio, I should note, I bought a new USB microphone, which John and I tested before the podcast, and it sucked. So I went back to my, my blue, what is this thing called? Blue Ice, or whatever it's called, microphone, which had been giving me problems a couple of months ago, but I guess I sound okay now. I used it last week too. I'm going to write a very disappointing review of the other USB mic I just got. I'm really, because it got good reviews on Amazon. So
yeah, might just be a weird settings issue that you have to play around with.
Yeah, maybe I'll try it on a Windows PC versus the Mac I've been using. Maybe it'll be a little different. Maybe I'll try with Teams or something. Alrighty, folks. So that's Microsoft Mobile Views Podcast 333. John Westfall and me, Todd Ogasawara, will talk to you next time, hopefully less than 3 months from now.
Yep.